You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back, everybody, to the third and final hour of tonight's live broadcast of TPC. It is Saturday evening, the first day of February, 2020 AD. Yes, I said AD. I don't say CE or BCE. It is AD, the year of our Lord, 2020. First day of February, already a month in the broadcasting books for us this year, and I think we have made every minute count thus far this year, as we always try to do. Great show tonight. A lot of news, a lot of information, a lot of opinion, a lot of analysis. Kevin McDonald in the second hour, always a treat, as is our guest for the third hour, the full third hour. Jack Ryan is on a sojourn. He is gone for a few weeks. He is in Africa tonight. We'll give you a little update about what Jack is up to in the third segment of this hour, which is his normal time to come on. He normally closes the show, the last two segments of any given show. Jack Ryan is with us. Well, not tonight and not for the next few weeks. So we have Tom Kaczynski on with us for the full third hour, all four segments. Tom Kaczynski is the former town manager of Jackman, Maine. And if you don't know what a town manager is, anywhere outside of Maine, you would know that position to be your mayor. But he's back with us tonight to discuss really an assortment of issues: the Iowa caucuses, Bernie Sanders, foreign policy, trade policy, coronavirus, the case for and against Donald Trump, and whatever else we want to get into. We got a lot of time to cultivate it. Keith is gone. Keith is on his way to barbecue. Keith has to leave at the end of the second hour each week, or he won't make it to the barbecue shop before they close. This is what you have to deal with in live radio, but thank God for Tom. Tom, how are you tonight, buddy?
I'm doing okay, man. I'm the last person standing, I guess. I'm glad I haven't abandoned you. We'll have a good one for the guests today.
Hey, well, not only are you not the person to abandon me, you are the first person to make a repeat appearance on the show this year. So there's, you know, a lot of dignity in that.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm definitely honored, and you know it. This is the it's a double honor being a Northerner. Welcome and talking to such a wonderful and hospitable Southern audience. So I appreciate the honor.
Well, the honor is all ours. You know, you're one of our favorites, and you're a guy who is like a Swiss Army knife. You can talk about anything and everything, and you can talk about it expertly. And so let's start now with Iowa. This is something I've really been holding my fire on to sink my teeth into until you appeared. So the Iowa caucuses are this week, in a couple of days, the Iowa caucuses. And here we go again, Tom. And wow, what a world apart we are from where we were as individuals, as a movement 4 years ago when we were so excited about Trump going into the Iowa caucuses, when we're all so much on that bandwagon. It's a whole different political world. And, of course, for any number of reasons, not the least of which is the fact that it's Democrats competing this time and not the Republicans, as it was in 2016. But right now, Bernie is leading the pack. What do you make of it?
I think it makes sense. I mean, if you look at it from the Democratic side, what they're really looking for is someone who they believe authentically speaks to their issues. You know, primaries are usually about passion and about intensity. Joe Biden is not going to inspire that in anyone. He never has. The man is a gaffe machine. Elizabeth Warren has really fallen back. And Pete Buttigieg was kind of the flavor of the week, I guess. And so it makes sense that Bernie will be the guy. And what's interesting is, you know, you see all these Democratic officials, party people, like Barack Obama and some of the people in his administration now trying to organize opposition to Sanders. And to tell you the truth, I think that, as much as anything, is probably driving his success.
You texted me something earlier this week. I'm trying to find it. Oh, Lord, I shouldn't be trying to find it.
One other piece to it, which was, I think it's really yes, important, is just that When you look at it, I mean, realistically, Sanders is not the strongest candidate in a lot of ways, but the populist anger that existed in 2016, I don't think it's dissipated at all. I mean, I think that Trump has lost some of his edge, to be honest, because he's become Jeb Bush with different hair. But ultimately, I think that, you know, old people want something different. And Sanders does have the credibility of having said a lot of unpopular things, which, you know, happen to be objectively wrong. But he's been consistent about saying, I mean, this is a man who got married in the Soviet Union. For someone who's an old school communist or a new, you know, progressive, that's going to carry a lot of weight. And unless it's the same dynamic that really hurt the Republicans in 2016, the Democrats not being able to unite around one candidate to oppose him might find he's the person with a plurality of votes. And, you know, I'm predicting not only will he win Iowa, but I think, you know, being a Mainer and having lived in New Hampshire before, I would be stunned if the Vermont senator doesn't win in the neighboring state of Vermont, or excuse me, of New Hampshire as well.
Well, that's what you said. So you were texting me earlier this week. This is what I was trying to find a moment ago, in that for the Democratic primary voters, Bernie Sanders is the most authentic, and primaries are always a passion play. That's where people vote with their hearts and not necessarily with their minds. And if he wins Iowa, he's almost a shoe-in for the reasons you mentioned. Logistically and geographically speaking, he's a shoe-in in New Hampshire. So he goes 2-for-2. Joe's got a firewall down there with the black voters for whatever reasons unbeknownst to me, in South Carolina. But it could be a prolonged primary season for the Democrats if Bernie goes 2-for-2 early.
I think one of the really important changes this time around is California has moved very much forward in the calculations. I think it's like their fifth or sixth state, if I'm not mistaken. And if Bernie manages to win California after winning some combination of Iowa, New Hampshire, and possibly Nevada, that South Carolina firewall will dissipate. And I think it's important to say this, and I say this with some understanding of how politics works on the ground. A big part of Joe Biden's firewall in South Carolina has to do with institutional party actors wringing out votes through whatever means necessary rather than any sort of excitement for that. And now that things are structured differently, especially if Bernie can win 3 or 4 and maybe California quickly, the question's going to be, can he win enough to avoid a brokered convention? Because what will be really curious is the Democratic Party would want to do anything but run with Bernie Sanders at the top of the ticket. But if he has 40% of the electorate and they go ahead and give the nomination to someone else, you may see a war on the convention floor. So in the same way that Trump sort of engineered a hostile takeover over the Republican Party, I think the odds have to be in Bernie's favor at this point of pulling it off, absent some unforeseen event. And, of course, politics being politics, you know, we can expect to see some strange games pop up. But it's a weak field for them. And as we talked about, Bernie is someone who comes there with a very clear message, a degree of authenticity. And, you know, I think he might even be likable compared to some of them.
Well, folks, listen, the 2020 presidential cycle is in full swing right now. I mean, the first states are going to vote for the Democratic primary candidate this week. We are back into it in a big way. And 4 years ago, it was a totally different world. I'm looking at the politicalcesspool.org website. It was on March 1st of 2016 that I wrote my report from the Donald Trump press pen, where I was a credentialed member of the media. We'll be back right after this.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q, The Calm Before the Storm, by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q, The Calm Before the Storm, available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues that affect the American West, its people, lifestyles, lands, and wildlife. The Loving Liberty Radio Network is proud to support the publisher's efforts to provide an active forum for solutions that preserve the vanishing American cowboy, farmer, and sheepherder. Each issue contains informative articles on life in the American West, along with breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of the cowboy spirit in our day. Each issue of Range Magazine also features great gift ideas, like the 2020 Real Buckaroo Calendar and the book Tales from Out There. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Just click on the shopping cart. The Loving Liberty Radio Network salutes the spirit of the American West and those who are keeping it alive at Range Magazine. Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
Get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
All right, back with the one and only Tom Kaczynski. Made national news a couple of years ago for not being ashamed to be white. You can't not be ashamed to be white and be a mayor of a town, or a town manager, as they call it up there. And, well, I don't know. How do you want to put it? Did Tom pay the price, or did he come out good on the other side? Here he is now tonight. We're proud of him. Tom, we salute you. I wish I had you as my mayor, I can tell you that much.
Well, you know, if you ever end up, if the good people of the South don't take care of you, we can show you some northern hospitality. It's about 20 degrees outside and the snow's piling up. You'll love it.
Hey, listen, don't worry about that. Even as a native-born Southerner whose roots trace back to the South as far as I can gather, I never took to the weather. So I'm all for those northern European winters and dark days and nights. So I'm with you on the climate, brother. Well, anyway, hey, tomorrow somebody asked if we're going to be talking about the Super Bowl. Yeah, I'm going to talk about the Super Bowl. Don't watch it. But if you do watch it, there's going to be a couple of ads of some interest to you. It's the first time that presidential candidates on each side of the aisle have run Super Bowl ads. Donald Trump is running two Super Bowl ads, 30 seconds apiece. One's going to be, I think, a pro-gun ad, and one's going to be a surprise ad. We'll just have to wait and see if you watch it. Michael Bloomberg is going to be, how well has he done as a president, I guess you could say. And, in fact, that's one of the reasons we brought Tom on tonight. He's going to give us a quick case for and against Donald Trump. But Michael Bloomberg as well, I believe he's running a 60-second ad. $22 million between the two, by the way, in Super Bowl ads. The question has to be asked then, Tom, does Bloomberg factor into the Democratic primaries at all at any point? Because, I mean, he's sort of a wild card. He came in so late he can't even qualify for the early contest, but he's spending, God, I'd like to have that kind of money, untold millions. What do you think?
Yeah, it's hard to say what Bloomberg's game is. I don't think he has any real chance of winning, but the man is amassing huge influence within the Democrat Party. You know, I know it was a month ago we were talking so heavily about Virginia and the events down there. One of the things that's not well understood was how much money was spent in those state elections directly from Michael Bloomberg to convert the state of Virginia. So it's part of a larger strategy where he has been much more involved and trying to get a higher profile within the Democrat Party. I think it's very possible Bloomberg may have made the determination that the Democrats are likely to lose to Donald Trump in this election. And I think that holds true for a couple reasons. And maybe he's building some roots there for the future, or, you know, maybe he was just bored and wanted to spend money. I mean, I guess if you have more money than you do sense, this is what you do.
All right, let me ask you this, and this is difficult to do in a short amount of time, but let's just say 60 seconds for, 60 seconds against. The case for Trump, he's not Hillary Clinton. The case against Trump, he hasn't built the wall. There's been so many promises that he made as a candidate that haven't been fulfilled, and we could go on and on and on. There's a reason I ask you this, and it goes back to Bernie Sanders, which we were talking about in the previous segment. But a quick case for and against Trump, if you can, Tom.
Yeah, sure. The case for Trump is that he won't criminalize free speech, which is something I think we legitimately have to fear from the progressive left. We've seen before that when you elect a Democrat, you are going to get someone in there who is going to bring in people who are ideological partners. I'm sure you've seen some of the Project Veritas video about what sort of people who are hanging around Bernie Sanders. He might be the Menshevik that brings in the Bolsheviks. And for that reason alone, any of these Democrats become a terrible choice compared with President Trump. So that's the case for him, not so much what he's done well, but the terrors of the other side. The case against him, I would say, is that there's a certain passiveness that exists whenever you have an incumbent in there. The track record of second-term incumbents is pretty dismal in terms of accomplishing things domestically. You'll see him try to make some foreign policy plays. In fact, you know, the peace treaty we're going to try to talk about later as a part of that. But I think the idea that he's going to move anything forward on immigration or border control is just impossible because, frankly, the Republicans won't help him. The day after the election, America First nationalism is going to disappear and the bad old days are going to be back with all the problems we understand. That being said, Trump does give us a little more time to figure out some other solutions. So I say vote for him.
That's interesting. That's interesting because, you know, we ran a poll, I believe, back in January, which is a far cry from Election Day. And the majority of the poll, do you vote for Trump, the field, or set out? The vast majority was to set out. Of course, Trump won over the field, and that included all other candidates. But I would say this of in Trump's favor. I still have to think that Biden is probably the front runner for the Democratic nomination, even though Sanders is surging, especially in the early primary states. I heard an ad or a clip from a recent Elizabeth Warren rally. And let me just say this, folks, from the heart, and all I can be is truthful with you on this program. That's all I have ever been able to be. It is so ridiculous to listen to a woman try to sound forceful. And I think even in their heart of hearts, leftists, so-called progressives, and even feminists know that it's ridiculous. So no, a woman shouldn't be president. I don't think a woman should be able to vote, but that's just me. But let's just say it comes down to Biden and Sanders. And this is what Pat Buchanan wrote about Sanders this week in his most recent column. How would Sanders deal with the millions of illegal migrants now within the country? He'd welcome them all in. Bernie has proposed the abolition of immigration and customs enforcement and customs and border protection and wants to provide a pathway to citizenship for the 11 to 22 million illegal migrants already here. He would decriminalize border jumping and give health care and welfare benefits to the invaders. He would decriminalize the breaching of America's borders. My first executive orders, tweeted Bernie last week, will be to reverse every single thing President Trump has done to demonize and harm immigrants, including his racist and disgusting Muslim ban. Now, we could spend an hour, Tom, complaining about who Trump is and what he has done or hasn't done. But compared to that, he is a hell of a lot better than Bernie, and that may be enough.
I think that's the only option we have. You know, I tell you the truth, up here in Maine, if Bernie Sanders gets elected, I'm going to talk to all my Christian friends up here, and we're going to try to port in as many illegal South Africans as we can and at least bring some people up here who will provide some protection for the terrorists that will be coming.
Touche.
Yeah. So, I mean, but it is, it's really a terrible situation, because the problem is we're stuck with someone who isn't getting things done. And, you know, the problem with Trump really is that he has surrounded himself with terrible people, and he's dealt with the consequences of that. And as someone who's been an executive before, I would say one of the basic responsibilities of being an executive isn't just the vision you lay out, but the people you bring in and take account for in trying to accomplish this. And this isn't, it's one thing to blame people who were in office before he was there. His own cabinet has betrayed him so many times that he really needs to think more intelligently, and it kind of makes you wonder at some point what he has really been trying to accomplish all along.
Well, that's where we are right now, Tom, and, you know, barring a Tom Kaczynski administration, these are probably the, the choices we're left with. And believe me, if I had my vote, you know, it wouldn't be in contest.
Well, I tell you what's going to happen, though. The thing about it, though, is as when the next Democrat gets in there, this is the thing that people really need to know, whether it's Bernie or any other, that amnesty motion is happening. And then at that point, you can kiss Texas goodbye. You can kiss Arizona goodbye. And I don't think Georgia and Florida will be behind them by very far. What that means, Democrats will have locked down 303 electoral votes, and you will never see anyone who is not a progressive in office again.
Yeah, but is that the thing, though? I mean, that's the thing that I think it's come down to. Do you want to see it now or in 4 years? Because, I mean,
yes,
Trump hasn't really done anything to stop it either. That's the thing that is so frustrating about it all, is that if Bernie gets in, it happens, you know, in November. If Trump wins again, it happens 4 years later. And that's what that's your choice. Am I wrong?
Hey, do you want it fast or slow? That's what we get.
Well, I guess if I'm dying, you know, if I'm dying on my deathbed, I want every last breath. But we'll be right back.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
There's a new warning from the State Department telling Americans not to travel to China due to the coronavirus. United, Delta, and American are suspending flights, and Americans are trying to leave China before the Monday cutoff. An eighth case has been confirmed in the U.S., a person from Massachusetts who recently went to China, where there are now 304 people dead. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar has declared a public health emergency. John Clemens has more.
That announcement from HHS also included an order that those returning to the U.S. are to be quarantined for 2 weeks. Secretary Azar believes that risk is low, but caution is advised.
The risk of infection for Americans remains low. And with these and our previous actions, we are working to keep the risk low.
This is USA Radio News.
At the American Veterinary Medical Association annual convention in Washington, D.C., I spoke with Dr. John Howe, AVMA president, about One Health.
One Health is really a collaboration between physicians and veterinarians or public health officials. For example, in Minnesota, our state public health veterinarian deals with zoonotic diseases, rabies, for example. Animals are sentinels for humans, and humans are sentinels for some infections in animals.
There's more valuable information at avma.org.
Friends and family, did you have a great night's sleep last night? I did. I'm healthier than I've ever been. I work better than I ever have. And you know what? You can have that health. You can have that good night's sleep if you order a MyPillow. Try it. Mike Lindell guarantees it. He's got a 60-day money-back guarantee on the MyPillow and a 10-year warranty. Go to MyPillow.com. Click on the radio listener special. Use my promo code USA or call 1-800-951-8175.
The Senate has voted to not allow witnesses and documents in President Trump's impeachment trial. Two Republican senators broke rank and voted yes, Susan Collins and Mitt Romney. All others were along party lines. Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said,
America will remember this day, unfortunately, where the Senate did not live up to its responsibilities, where the Senate turned away from truth and went along with a sham trial.
The Treasury has imposed fiscal sanctions against Iran's nuclear energy chief and ordered his U.S.-linked assets frozen amid ongoing tensions between Washington and Tehran. On Thursday, they sanctioned Ali Akbar Salehi, the head of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, saying the agency has played a significant role in Tehran violating nuclear regulations. Tehran denounced the new sanctions, saying they smack of desperation. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Dedicate that song to our regular TPC contributor, Jack Ryan, who would normally be anchoring the last two segments of any given broadcast, but not tonight. Tonight, Jack is in Africa, so we encourage him to run through the jungle. I asked Jack before he left when he'd be back. He said if a South African woman so much as smiles at him, he's never coming back. We'll just have to wait and see. Jack did text me earlier today when he was at his waypoint in Dubai. He said he was at the Dubai airport having a beer with a couple of Indians. Only Jack Ryan could say that. So we'll see what happens. We'll try to keep you posted through text with the exploits of Jack Ryan's African safari. We'll see when he comes back. Could be a couple of weeks. Could be a month or two, could be never. We'll see. But thankfully, in the meantime, we've got plenty of talent to draw from. And we've got Tom Kaczynski for the full hour, even into Jack Ryan's normal territory. So I'm looking right now, Tom, at an article I wrote March 1st, 2016. Political cesspool host James Edwards reports from inside Donald Trump's press pen. So much has changed in 4 years. That's almost 4 years to the day. We'll revisit that next month. I got the first picture is of me and little Katie Tour, as Trump called her, and she was little. Picture of me and Katie together. That was a hell of a day, and it spawned a year of unprecedented coverage for this radio program. But it didn't turn out the way we hoped it would. That candidacy did not, unfortunately. And now we're here talking about it. And we've been talking about it for the first two segments of this hour with Tom Kaczynski. So we got to vote for somebody, Tom, in November. You're saying what?
Vote for Trump. Yeah, you got to vote for Trump. I mean, honestly, we're not ready for the alternative. And I wish we were, but ultimately we're going to get to a point where people need to recognize that the changing demography of the United States is such that we are going to become a one-party country, or if we remain a two-party country, it will be because the Republicans become full-on socialists, which they already are doing on social issues. Look how they've abandoned, you know, Christian social ethics. How they've, you know, now they're the party of defending gays and the party of defending, you know, and pretty soon I'm sure they'll bring abortion back into the mix. I mean, we've seen that before. So I think ultimately we're going to be left without a choice. And what you're going to see is that because of the amount of people who've come in here, I think one of the things that people don't know, that's a fabulous fact, is that 4 out of every 10 Americans that were added in the last decade were in fact born outside of this country. The replacement is real, and so is the voting habits that stem from that. So we are going to see a reformulation where there will be a regional party or regional movement that stand in opposition to what the federal government's imposing upon us. And I think it's going to be really fascinating to see what happens when you have a permanent minority made of what was the traditional majority, but that majority, that new minority is clustered in certain areas, like the Appalachian Mountains that you and I know very well. It will be difficult, in my opinion, for the United States to hold together as that happens. And I've predicted publicly that we may not see this country survive this next decade, specifically because of these political conflicts.
Tom, we were talking earlier about, of course, well, the decision. I mean, we're talking about it now even. You go for the lesser of two evils. We talked about how awful, or rather how good Trump looks to the awful alternative of Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren. Our good friend Brad Griffin wrote with regard to the signing of the USMCA. If you would allow me a moment, just a little berth here, I'll try to work this in because I want to get your opinion on it, of course, Tom. But I'm going to read a few paragraphs here from Brad's article at Occidental Dissent, and he writes this. Congratulations on tweaking and rebranding NAFTA. Now Trump will own USMCA and the consequences in the 2020 elections. Perhaps it will be different this time from the U.S.-South Korea trade agreement he renegotiated in 2018. This is a recurring pattern with Donald Trump. He will identify a political grievance and loudly complain about it to create the impression that he's going to do something. Then he will either forget about the issue entirely or make some minor change and declare victory, and the status quo more or less continues. He gets away with this because his followers are too trusting and partisan to look at the details. In 2016, he made a huge deal about how all of his political rivals were controlled by the donors and he was independent of their influence because he was self-financing his campaign. Then, after winning the presidency, he cut all the donors in during the transition when no one was paying attention. He made a huge deal about how the hedge fund guys, quote unquote, were making a killing thanks to the carried interest loophole during the campaign. Then he signed the tax bill that included the huge corporate tax cut, which conveniently dropped the pledge to eliminate the loophole. He declared that NAFTA was the worst trade deal in history. Then he signed a slightly modified version of it last week. He pulled the troops out of Syria only to redeploy them in Iraq and the Gulf. He complained about our relationship with Russia, only to pile sanctions on Russia, arm Ukraine, expand NATO, and withdraw from the INF treaty. He promised a big, beautiful wall, only to end up refurbishing sections of George W. Bush's fence while expanding guest worker programs. Every negative trend he complained about in the 2016 campaign, political correctness, trade deficits, legal and illegal immigration, our relationship with Russia, being sucked into endless wars in the Middle East, health care costs, decaying infrastructure, opioid overdose doses, and suicides is worse, while the people who are disaffected because of those issues are now satisfied and convinced that they are winning solely because Trump is the president. Social media censorship, Antifa violence, government persecution of dissidents, the corruption of the courts, and the FBI are all many times worse than they were in 2016. Word has it that Nancy Pelosi and the Democrat-controlled House of Representatives added 600 pages to the new trade agreement before it was signed into law by Trump. In those 600 pages are elements of almost all of their socialist, radical, environmental, sovereignty killing, open border, anti-property, anti-free enterprise, globalist agenda. There's even language promoting and protecting transgenderism. There's our choice, Tom. Trump or Sanders, Warren, Biden, et al.
Well, you know, there's a reason why I say I'm a Mainer, not an American. I don't know what to say. You know, the thing about it is that ultimately, you know, you look at the institutional history of things, right? The Republican Party was a mercantile party of Northeastern liberals that got together to make a bunch of money by screwing people over. Donald Trump is a mercantile liberal that makes a whole bunch of money by screwing people over. You know, he was on NBC for many years, and NBC, as we know, is a sort of left-leaning network. And I think he does two things well. I mean, one, he bets on the ignorance of people, which is pretty smart because it's worn out all these times. But secondly, is Trump knows as a showman that people don't care about what you do. They care about how you make them feel. And Donald Trump speaks to a certain element of the American population who love to hear what he has to say. He makes them feel good to be an American. He is the Indian summer of our failing republic, and so people will continue to support him because there is still a desire to want to believe in America. It's just the problem is there are no candidates out there who have the gumption or the courage to do the sort of things necessary to make it happen. And regrettably, I think that we'll never get that from Congress because my impression is that overwhelmingly, the Congress is beholden to the financial interests that get them elected. And we understand the role of AIPAC, of CARE, of all these different entities that ensure that the only people who are not represented by United States Congress are the American people. And that's really the tragic thing of the whole deal.
The Indian summer of our failing republic, that is probably the best line we've had so far this year, and it is spot on as we cover a new election cycle. I mean, they really never stop running for president. It's almost a perpetual cycle, but with the Iowa caucuses, we are back at it in full force this week.
James, I mean, if you really think about it, that you're right. It is a perpetual election. It's a perpetual revolution. It's a left-wing idea, right? I mean, and if you think about it, and this has been one of the interesting evolutions of my thought, we imagine our republic was a glorious way of honoring God, of representing the people. Is it not, in fact, the very way the left degrades legitimate use of power? We should ask that.
Well, and we just did. Let's let the audience ponder upon that question as we go to this last break of the program. One last segment with Tom Kaczynski and still much more to cover. We're going to try to cram it all in one fleeting segment when we come back with the former town manager of Jackman, Maine. Stay tuned.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
The press has created a rigged system. They even want to try and rig the election.
Well, I tell you what, it helps in Ohio that we got Democrats in charge of the machines.
And poisoned the mind of so many of our voters.
At the polling booths, where so many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country.
I come from Chicago. So I want to be honest. It's not as if it's just Republicans who have monkeyed around with elections in the past. Sometimes Democrats have too. You know, whenever people are in power, they have this tendency to try to, you know, tilt things in their direction.
There's no vote.
You start whining before the game's even over. Whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else. Then you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused Border Agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text FIGHT to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. defendapatriot.com.
Now, Mr. and Mrs. Sir Galahad, what seems to be the problem?
Well, it's just not working.
She's been very unrealistic.
Really? Ever since he rescued me from the dragon, we've been drifting apart.
That's not true.
We were supposed to live happily ever after.
Now, this isn't a fairy tale.
At first, he was gallant and chivalrous, opening doors for me, holding my chair, taking my arm.
All right, I'm not as young as I used to be.
He simply isn't the man who swept me off my feet.
Well, you're not as young as you used to be.
Mr.
Sir Galahad, maybe if you started by just holding Mrs. Sir Galahad's hand when you're together.
Really?
Yes, try it.
Okay.
All right. Go on, take her hand. Careful, little oil.
Marriage. You're never too far apart when you're still holding hands. From your neighbors, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Now, look into each other's eyes. That's right. Raise your visor.
Oh, they're blue, dear.
For more tips on strengthening your marriage, visit family.mormon.org.
Mama, that young, giving birth to a son in a home for wayward girls. And it was a sign of the soapbox preacher looking for a today in an old world. Every Friday night, he picked Jesus a fight down at the local pool hall. Racking up souls, coming in on all those behind the eight ball. Is it I preach the light, the light shows the way? Don't ever trust what the government say. We never walked on the moon. Elvis ain't dead, you ain't going crazy. It's all in your head.
Are you safe? Are you safe, brother, brother, sister?
Presented without comment from, that was one that our illustrious owner, producer, friend Sam Bushman drew up for us tonight, and I am thankful that he did. What more can you say than that? What a great intro to the last segment of the night with Tom Kaczynski. Tom, man, so much to talk to you about. But before we do anything else, there are three different things I want to cover this segment. We're lucky to cover one in an hour, so we got to make haste. But give us your contact information and what you're up to, because people need to be following you and supporting your work. You're one of our favorites, and we're always the better when you're on our broadcast.
Well, thank you for that, James. I appreciate it. It's always a pleasure. You can follow me the easiest way at this point. Go on Gab or Twitter at Tom Kaczynski, K-A-W-C-Z-Y-N-S-K-I. Every time I try to build a website, it ends up getting shut down. And, you know how it is when you're out there saying certain things that are unpopular. So, and keep an eye on Amazon. I've got quite a few books out, working on the new Albion project, which really is the future of what America is going to look like as we move toward the idea of different sort of nations. So one day we'll have to come on and talk about that, maybe when the news slows down, if we ever get a chance.
Well, you're always welcome here, brother, and there will always be time for you, so I'm sure we will make that appointment. So, and by the way, folks, if you follow our Twitter account or our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, Twitter at James Edwards TPC, we link right over to Tom Kaczynski's handle. You can pick it up there. So, you know, with regard to the whole discussion, it's been an underlying discussion this hour. The lesser of two evils. How good is Trump? How bad is the alternative? You know, I think, Tom, it would be convenient if we could view Trump without having to squint our eyes and look through a special lens to determine whether or not he is sincere or part of this pageant that we call political theater. I was there at the inauguration. I was there very close at the inauguration, thanks to the Liberty News Radio Network. And Jared Taylor was with me, and we were just there, just a few feet from the president when he swore the oath of office. We were right there. We could have hit him with a baseball. That's how close we were. And I found it very curious right from the beginning that he had Chuck Schumer deliver a talk, I believe maybe even a prayer there at his inauguration. Any president who can't determine friend from foe raises a big red flag. There was Chuck Schumer there at a position of honor and of renown at his inauguration. And then later John Bolton causing trouble even recently with the impeachment proceedings. John Bolton, a neocon's neocon, a war hawk if there ever was one. I mean, Trump ran on this campaign in part mostly to secure the border, but another thing that was big for him was to pull us out of these unconstitutional, unnecessary wars. And then he brings in Bolton, and Bolton has been a POS from the beginning. Man, I wish we could see Trump more clearly, I guess what I'm getting at.
Well, let me try, right? So maybe we're framing Trump wrong. You know, we view politics through the eye of ideology or culture. But if you look at it from Trump's perspective, this is a businessman who looks at it through the perspective of economics. And from his perspective, trade deals are being made. The market is up high, and he'll work with actors. He'll work with enemies, because in real estate, like many fields, you know, someone who's your friend in one project may be your enemy the next day. And I think Trump just sees that as part of the theater of the process, because I don't think he's driven primarily by social issues or by cultural considerations. And, you know, like a lot of people of his generation, there is a certain obliviousness to the long-term consequences of things, which I think certain people around him facilitate. And so from his perspective, he probably thinks he's doing a great job. The only thing is, the great job he's doing is not going to leave us with a country 10 years from now to inherit. But you don't think of that when you're thinking of business. You're thinking of things next quarter projections, you know?
That's actually a fantastic answer. Pragmatic, but fantastic. Tom, I hate to do this to you. We have about 5 or 6 minutes remaining. We have three topics that we could have spent at least a segment, if not an hour on. So I'm going to give you 60 seconds each, and that's a disservice. But the peace plan, the Kushner peace plan, give us a minute on that.
It looks like the Arabs aren't going to go for it. Abbas has been going against that. One of the things that has to be understood in this is the reason why peace doesn't happen in the Middle East is because Palestine gets a lot of money from Arab countries, but they also serve as a vent for domestic grief to go toward the Israelis rather than them. I have no love of Israel or Saudi Arabia, but I think that this was a poison pill and it's sort of a legacy play. We'll see if it gets anywhere. The interesting thing is Israel may just enact it on its own, and if the United States backs them, it may make a different relationship between us and the Sunni powers, and that's worth watching.
Fantastic answer, succinct and to the point. Brexit, is it something we can be proud about, or is it a question of whether England and the United Kingdom want to do for itself what the European Union would have done? In other words, are they embracing liberal democracy and going to take themselves down the same road independently that the EU would have done, and they claim that as a great victory? Or is there something here that we can actually say is a victory for the good guys?
Well, I think Brexit is a win in the sense that it shows the revitalization of English nationalism and that there is an interest there. I don't expect the Johnson government to do things that differently than Theresa May would have. They're already talking about bringing in foreign talent, much like the U.S. program. I think, if anything, you might see Britain act a lot more like America moving forward, which, depending on what you think of our foreign policy, will determine what you think the value of Brexit. And the Anglosphere will act much more united in the future as a result of these actions.
I think looking at it grand scheme, it's a good thing, but looking at it in a fine-tuned sort of a sense, it may be much ado about nothing. It may be, I mean, we see the nationalist movement in Scotland, for instance. They want to be nationalists. We're all for nationalism, but they want to be more left-wing than they would have been under their, you know, present orders. So
they want to be part of the European Union. I mean, where's the nationalism in it? I don't get it. I mean, Nicola Sturgeon's crazy.
Touche. We'll see. I am glad. One of our friends, Nick Scanlon, who is a longtime listener and fan of TPC, wrote, "For the first time in decades, Britain is now a functioning sovereign nation thanks to 17.5 million patriots. May those same patriots recognize that our battle is far from over. The Tories are a party of mass immigration, multiculturalism, and social liberalism. Every party in Westminster is evidently complacent with a politically correct ideology that has altered the very character of the UK. Today, fingers are crossed that this is the beginning of a revolt against our masters. Happy Brexit Day." Well, I share Nick's sentiments there. It could be good. Let's hope that it is. But independence in and of itself is not a good
thing. Absolutely. It's very good that this happened. It would be better if the government follows the will expressed by the English people.
There you go.
I agree.
There you go. Okay. 30 seconds, 45 seconds, coronavirus. We covered it a little bit in the second hour. You said you were preparing for it. Is it going to be bad?
It's going to be terrible, in my opinion. What's happening in China will happen here in the United States 4 to 6 weeks from now, and it's going to change human civilization, in my opinion. And I know that's heavy to leave with, but that's my opinion.
Well, we could have done a whole hour on that's too heavy. We could have done an hour on that. Because I'm looking at the numbers right now, 7,000, 8,000 infected cases, 100, 200 deaths.
Let me give you the key fact that you need to know. For every one person who obviously has it, odds are 16 to 25 people have it, don't know they're having it, don't show they're having it, and are spreading it right now. We still have people entering this country from China. Trump's biggest failure will be his failure to enforce quarantine and shut that travel ban down. Mark my words, we're going to be talking about this a lot more in the future. Please take actions to keep safe, and do not assume that something that happened in China cannot happen here. We are making the same mistakes the Chinese made, and it will be very dangerous for the American people.
Well, I think, Tom, perhaps we should have you back on in very short order to talk more about this as the story continues to evolve. The question was, and we asked this in the second hour rhetorically, is China a first world nation or a third world nation? Or is it like America where parts are and parts aren't?
it's going to be an empty nation. I mean, unfortunately, the death rate on this thing is up over 10%. And, you know, it may be as high as 50%. You know, the cases that have been tried, the thing they're not saying as of today, 14,000 cases, another 18,000 suspected. More have died than have recovered. Keep an eye on it.
Oh, boy. Well, that is not a place to leave it, but we must, because commercial radio is a cruel master. Tom, we'll have you on. I know you're learned about this, certainly much more than we are. We're just following the headlines, as anybody else would. Let's have you back on to talk about this soon. I'm James Edwards for Keith Alexander, Tom Kaczynski, and, of course, Kevin McDonald. Thank you for being with us tonight. We'll see you again next week. If we survive that long, keep your fingers crossed. Stay healthy, folks. Good night.